Hello and welcome to episode 163 of Game Store Profits, the podcast where a couple of guys get together to hang out, talk about God, talk about games, and the amazing things that happen when you bring those two things together. I'm Mike Perna, one of your hosts, and by the fact that you have not heard Daniel Fisher start this off and giving me some kind of ridiculous title, you may have noticed that this is probably going to be a solo episode. But yes, no. Kind of. Let's go with the fact that we're going to call it a pseudo-solo episode, because right now I'm the only one here, I'm the only one on the mic, but we do have something that is going to be, well, let's just put it as it is, it's way off normal, but what it's going to be is something that will kind of speak to you guys, or at least I hope it will. But before we get into any of that, I am here. I am going to actually be introducing something, as we are already dealing with an episode that is way off normal, way off the usual kind of structure. I figured that this would be a phenomenal time to introduce something new that we have going on for the podcast. Now, if you've been listening to us for a while, then you probably realize that we don't really go for segments around here. We mostly do just kind of conversational stuff. It's always been our shtick to just get the guys around the mics, talk about what we've been playing, and then just kind of let that flow into what's going to be brought out from playing those games. Now, granted, we talk about what we want to do beforehand. We have a general idea of what we're going to do. We don't literally just wing it, but we do just tend to have more of a free-flowing narrative. And while I do think that's going to be that's going to remain the overall concept of what this show looks like and what it's going to be in the future, there's something that's happened over the past handful of episodes that has led us to kind of say, you know what, maybe there is room for a segment in this style, that we're not going to compromise what the show looks like, how it feels like, but at the same point, kind of put this in there because we think it's something that's worth doing. Now, this happened, I guess you could kind of say that the origin of this happened in a conversation with Sean, our mostly off-mic kind of counterpart here at Inroads. Sean and I were having a conversation. I was complaining about how I wanted to buy something. We had a random influx of money here at the Perna household, and I'm like, man, I can finally buy a new game. What should I buy? There are so many options, so many things, so much new, shiny. And Sean basically is like, yeah, I'm kind of over the new shiny. There's so many games that are sitting on my shelf that I haven't played. It seems like everything that's coming out now is just some kind of iteration on something that's already happened before. And I really wish that, you know, we'd spend more time talking about the games that we've only played once or twice. And I go, yeah, as much as I am a rampant member of the Cult of the New, I always want the new cool thing because of the fact that I can look kind of as a perspective and see the design changes, the shifts, the concepts being transferred from game to game, see how they've been iterated on and built upon. I love that stuff. And so, yeah, I love the new games. But at the same point, there is something about being like, man, I have not gotten that game to table in such a long time. I really need to do something about that. Well, that got me talking with Daniel and talking with Jeff. And we realized that all of us had that kind of same idea going, that yeah, we like the new stuff, yeah, we really do enjoy all the cool stuff that's happening in the gaming industry, but there needs to be a place for things that have been around for a while, and not even necessarily like going back into the ancients. We're not, you know, getting the ancient Game of Kings. We're not, you know, going back into the day and find weird Roman dice. We're talking about stuff that's within the past 5-10 years. We want to create kind of a segment and throw it in. It generally, it's probably going to be towards the beginning of each episode. But what we're going to end up doing is we're calling it the Archive Dive. And it's basically the idea that one of us will be going back into games of old. And by games of old, I say games that are at least more than 1 year old. Because generally speaking, a game can hold hype for a year and people will still be talking about it for a year. It's after that first year is over that people tend to, unless you're talking about the really, really big ticket games, they just kind of fall off radar. They just disappear and just start taking up shelf space. So partly because of the fact that there's a lot of these games that are among our favorites that we really enjoy that have kind of fallen off radar. Another aspect of it is because of the fact that we come at it from this Christian perspective, it is this understanding of stewardship. Like, you don't need, I mean, literally the last episode was chasing the cardboard dragon. Like, I intentionally make this reference. I mean, you can constantly be striving for the new thing, new thing, new thing, but there will always be a new thing. So, as an element of stewardship, like taking care of what you already have and appreciating what you already have, there's so much on our shelves. I have a fairly, you know, in the grand scheme of the gaming, you know, industry, and especially when it comes down to the kind of collections that are owned by some of the more prominent content creators, my collection is middling, but even I have this huge selection of games that, you know, despite the fact that I've been trying very hard to whittle my shelf of shame, aka games that I've never played yet, that is down to only a handful of titles, and mostly the ones that are on there are because I only just got them. Even with that, there are still some games that if I look back into my BGG kind of listings, I'm like, man, that one hasn't seen the table in a really, really long time, and I need to fix that. So that's what this is going to be. Normally, in future episodes, this is going to be something that one of us is going to take a game. If there's really nothing going on with us, maybe nothing going on in the industry, so you can kind of guess this is going to be a rare thing. Maybe we'd stretch it to like a couple of us. Maybe we'd make an episode of it. But mostly it's going to be just one of us will gather info on a game that has been kind of just disappeared off people's attention, and we will talk about it. Tonight, to kind of introduce it, and especially due to the fact that it's just me tonight, I want to look at a handful of games. In fact, I'm going to look at three different games, and each one of them is going to be something that I bring forward for a different reason. It's going to be talking about some element of my relationship with the hobby. These are games that brought me in or brought other people in or kind of expanded my concept of what games are like. Now, again, they're all over 1 year, so we are going to go in what I'm referring to as reverse chronological order, aka we're going to go with the one that's the most recent, the closest to what's currently available, and then go back and really get into a dive later with titles that have been around for quite some time. Now, the first one, there's part of me that wants to go on a whole big deal about, you know, the fact that it was, you know, distributed by Asmodee, because even in and of itself, that fact that it was distributed by Asmodee had a whole different meaning now than it would have back then. Back then, Asmodee was just the people who were producing it, who were bringing it to America from Europe. Now they're the overwhelming conglomerate that is trying to slowly gather up every little independent game producer that's out there in the world and kind of bring them all under one umbrella. So consider that a bonus content, like the little bit of just time capsule-y kind of material there, just the idea that this was Asmodee. But the first game I want to bring up is Seasons, which came out in 2012. Seasons had so much going for it. It was a really the phenomenal artwork. Again, it says a lot for how far the gaming kind of world, the gaming industry has come in the past 5 years, because, you know, now if a game doesn't have phenomenal artwork, you know, that's like, oh, that's a mark against it. But even back then, you know, yeah, we'd like to see good artwork, but good artwork was not even kind of a requirement. But then Seasons just nailed it, knocked it out of the park with these glorious, amazing chunky dice. And the artwork on the cards was great, and everything about it was really cool. The components were all on point. But the reason that I want to bring up Seasons, there could be lots of stuff. It's the combination of drafting both in cards and in dice. It's the idea that it really kind of had a kind of economy to it, despite the fact that it's really a simple game about making stuff. But it really does have this kind of intense economy if you really want to go deep into the dive. There's all sorts of stuff that I could talk about, but part of the reason why I really want to bring it up now is because this is the game that kind of, I'll say, expanded my borders when it came to what game themes could be about. Because up until then, every game, at least for me, I'm sure somebody could bring up another title that's like, oh my goodness, no, this has been out there. It was way out there longer. You know, some grognard's going to point out some way back title. But for me, Seasons was the first one that said, by the way, you can do themes that aren't about conquering or building an empire or settling down or going to war. Everything didn't have to be about conquest, because Seasons, the whole theme about this is a bunch of wizards who are getting together for an annual contest that's happening 3 years from now. And the whole idea of the contest is to see who can make the coolest stuff. So you're not like trying to produce fireballs that can nuke an enemy. You're not trying to do anything like that. This is literally like, look at this amazing astrolabe that I've built with my magic. Look at this cool guy who I've summoned to be my assistant. Isn't he awesome? Like, that's the kind of stuff you're doing. You are building, you are not destroying. Seasons, in of itself, has it drives and incentivizes the player to not mess with each other, to not destroy things. Yeah, there are cards that if something is really helping your opponent just dominate the points, you can take it out. But normally the stuff that takes things out for your opponents also hurts you. So it kind of, you know, disincentivizes you from going after other people, but just kind of makes you focus in on like, how can I be the coolest wizard that I can be? How can I make the most crystals? How can I be the most impressive one? So Seasons is an amazing game. It has a cool table presence. The feel of rolling these dice, the idea that the die themselves are different depending on which season of the year you are playing in. And the fact that I mentioned the economy earlier, the fact that different elemental energies are more prevalent during one season than they are in another. And the fact that you can really build this economy of, I'm going to pick up this energy, even though I don't need it, because next turn, we're going to be in a new season, and the energy that I just picked up really easily here is going to be able to be sold for a lot of crystals and a lot of cool stuff next season. It's like, that's the kind of stuff you think about. So you're drafting these dice thinking not only how do I make the stuff that's in my hand, but also you're thinking about how you can get the energy and how you can get crystals and how you can do all that stuff in future hands, because another season is coming. And before you know it, the second year's worth of cards are going to appear in your hand. I love Seasons, and it is a shame. It is a crime that Seasons has not come to my table more than it has. The next title I want to bring up is, it pretty much is a seminal classic. There's going to be a lot of people when I mention this one that goes, man, I can't believe Mike thinks that this one doesn't get to table. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I just need to bring it up because it is. It's a little on the older side. It's not flashy in the least. And anybody who is new to board gaming is probably going to be like, oh my goodness, why would you even bother picking that up? It's Castles of Burgundy, which came out in 2011. Castles of Burgundy, The short version is that you all have the same player mat, and it's all about this little area, kind of like this, I don't know, a village, a town, you're basically building up this area, and it's a really neat combination of luck, because you know what you can do in a turn is dictated by the dice that you roll. You roll two die, and that will dictate what kind of stuff you can do. But you can pick up buildings, you can build stuff into your city, you can get resources, you can, you know, sell those resources off to make some extra cash. I could very well say that the reason I'm bringing this up and the reason I think that it's worth looking up is because of the fact that I got it for another purpose, which I'm about to talk about, but this game really did establish in my head a lot of what I like about a lot of the more modern games, because this is a good combination of deterministic kind of rote Euro style gaming with an aspect of luck. The presence of the dice mixes things up and makes you stay on your toes just that much that it takes what could be, to me anyway, I know a lot of people who love their Euros, but it takes what could be a very stodgy Euro to me, like, okay, there is a strategy, you do that because that's the best move and you do this and you do that. The presence of the dice says you always have to be ready to be like, okay, if I get this, I'm going to go here. And if not, I have to go there to get that. And the thing that I like about it is it kind of has that hybrid feel because you're not just locked into those dice because there's workers that you can use to, you know, change the value of your dice. You can either make it go up or down to make it be whatever you want it to be. So yeah, there is an element of luck and there is that idea that the faces on your die might actually change your strategy. But you don't have to. There are ways that you can kind of bolster yourself to be like, and no, that two is now a three because I need a three to make this strategy work. The other reason why Castles of Burgundy is on this list and why I think that it's so important to me is because of the fact that it's pretty much the very first game that my wife got excited about. This was the very first game that made her be the one to instigate playing games with me. Randomly, she would be like, you know what? I want to play Castles of Burgundy again. And so this game has a very, very special place in my heart. There's lots of people who love it. Stefan Feld, the guy who designed it, is a phenomenal designer in the eyes of many. There's so much that could be said about Castles of Burgundy and why it should be brought to the table, why it should be in your collection if you don't have it, and why you should be exploring all the craziness that exists within it. I know for me, it will always be the game that I know Susan loves, the game that established in my head how I can get her to play games with me, because this, the idea that you have your own thing, that you are building up your own little duchy, your own little area. Like, most of the games that I have now that do that are because of the fact that my wife loved this so much. It reminded me that just because I think a certain game style is good does not mean that everyone thinks a certain game style is good, and that I needed to make sure that I kept my eyes on the lookout for stuff that might not be my necessarily go-to, but it's going to be somebody else's. It's going to be somebody else's who's going to bring them into the hobby and get them excited to play. The last one I want to bring up is really kind of funny for a couple of reasons. One, because if you've ever listened to the Dice Tower, If you've ever listened to the Dice Tower, you've heard Eric Summerer talk about a certain title. In fact, you haven't heard him talk about it so much as scream about it to the heavens. This game recently got a reprint, so it's even easier now than ever to get it to table. But this one was originally put out in 2000, and which would have been pretty much when I got it. I got it right around that time. It was still new. It's a game called Citadels. And Citadels to me, now there are some people who will argue that games that have kind of built on what Citadels did have kind of replaced Citadels. But for me, it's always going to be one of the games that got me into gaming. One of the games that took me to that next level of the hobby that said, no, there's some really cool stuff out there. It's also the game that, you know, introduced me to Bruno Fiduti. Bruno Fiduti has made some amazing games. I have a number of them because I really like what he does. There are so many games of his that I have on my shelf simply because his name was on them. And the reason for that is because I loved Citadels so much. The short version, if you've never played Citadels before, Citadels is a game where you have a hand of cards and every round you select a character to be. And they do crazy stuff like the assassin. You can basically say, okay, this character isn't going to go this turn. You have characters that collect income based on other types of cards that you've played. So the priest is going to be able to get money for every blue card that you have out in play. You have cards like the architect, which normally you can only build one kind of district into your city, but the architect lets you build two. There's all sorts of different cool stuff, and nobody knows exactly who everyone's played. And this was the first hidden role game that I've ever played. This was what introduced that to me, and I've since realized how much I love that mechanic, that style of game is really, really fun to me, and I really enjoy it, and I discovered it by playing Citadels. And like I said, they just redid it. They just put it out not that long ago. It has gotten an update to all its artwork, so you don't have to look at it. The artwork has never been bad, but man, the new stuff looks so much better, and the components are better, and everything's better. There was even a time when I saw the remaster came out that I was tempted to pick it up, even though I have my old copy. Like, that's how much of an important place Citadels has in my kind of state in the gaming hobby. It is well worth a look. There's so many interesting things that are going to happen, and the stories that come from this, the stories about how one guy is right on the edge of victory, but the assassin on a whim says, I'm going to say that the merchant is not going to, and all of a sudden that guy was the merchant, so everyone gets a reprieve, and somebody, you know, you get another turn. There's all sorts of cool stuff that happen as you're trying to build up this city filled with really cool, really interesting things. I like the fact that this game has it so that there are multiple ways to achieve victory. There are some people who buy tons of little tiny nothing kind of minuscule districts to kind of get to the seven you need to end the game. And they for them, that's a race game. There are other people, more often than not, myself included, who rather than trying to go necessarily to get to the end game of, you know, how many districts you need, I'd rather build a few districts who are all worth major, major points. I like that stuff. I like that there are characters that let you upgrade those. I like that there are characters in the box that say, okay, you don't want to play with that guy, play with this guy instead in that position. It works just as well. I love the different synergies of these cards. You know, there's a lot of people who have gotten tired of it. There's a lot of people who the shine is off the coin, as it were. But man, I love Citadels, and I would love to get this to table more. And you never know. Maybe with the reprint, then you never know. Maybe I will. And, you know, maybe I'll be able to introduce a whole bunch of other people into this hobby the same way this game introduced it to me. Well, folks, that's going to be it for me. That's going to be it for this new segment. Again, like I said, normally it's going to be one game we're going to highlight. We don't want this segment to kind of overtake the rest of the podcast, but I think that this is going to be a fun time, that we're going to be able to look back at titles that are really important to us, titles that, you know, kind of speak to, you know, a different element of the hobby. It's not always going to be like, what's the new thing? What's the cool thing? To be like, no, man, I just played so many of this game. I have a deep love for this game. I have a passion for this game. And yeah, you can be passionate about a new game, but it kind of burns out. Like I said, games can hold hype for a year, but then it dies. This is going to be our chance to kind of show that there is a deep kind of passion, a deeper kind of appreciation that can only come when you've played a game over and over and over again, when you've learned all the depth of strategy, when you've appreciated and gathered stories of times that you've played. So hopefully we'll be able to celebrate that with you guys. Now, this is going to be why I referred to this as a pseudo solo episode, because as you guys have noticed, Jeff has not been around for quite some time. And every time that we've said why Jeff hasn't been here, we've just said there's family stuff going on, because it wasn't ours to say. It wasn't, you know, if I can steal a line from Barden Bible, it's not our story to tell. It's his. And so we just kind of didn't want to put his stuff on the street. But as Jeff has had some really a little bit of blessing in the midst of chaos and craziness, and really, even in the way he addressed it to us, I'm like, dude, that is so encouraging and so needed and so, you know, poignant in days like this that I'm like, if you can, I'd love it if you could record just something that gives the regulars an update as to what you're about, what's going on, what's happening, so that they can be praying for you. But also because that idea of hope in the midst of chaos and craziness and weariness, that needs to be said, that needs to be shared. And so I asked Jeff to record something. And well, because he loves you guys and because he misses being able to talk to you, he was downright excited to be able to record something on the mics. And so here he is. Ladies and gentlemen, Jeff Romo.
Hey guys, it's Uncle Jeff here. It's been a while. I have not been on the podcast like I should. In between busyness and real life and other such nonsense sundries, it's been far too long since I've sat down with the guys. And in fact, I'm recording this, much as Mr. Mike has probably already indicated, I'm recording this separately, as trying to fit this in between my scheduled hectic life. Things kind of began when I switched jobs. That's when I started learning what it meant to be a project manager, truly and fully full-time and above full-time, hitting the 50 to 60 hour a week mark on occasion. But the wheels kind of were starting to come off the bus a little bit towards the end of July. My wife had to go through some fairly major surgery. She's safe and recovered quite well. Praise God for that. And there's going to be some more praises coming up here, so I'll get to those in a moment. But right about the time when my wife had just completed her surgery and was on her way home, the very next day, literally the very next day, we got a call. My mom had fallen, or she called me, she indicated that she had fallen, and the pain was so great that she had to go to the hospital. So we took her to, I got there, realized that we needed to call an ambulance. The ambulance came, took her, and x-rays later, we find out that she has a compression fracture on her lower spine, her L1. And, you know, she's 69 years old, going on 70 here in a couple months. And we needed to, the recommendation was by the doctor for her to go into a nursing home. She said no and decided that she wanted to go home, being very stubborn about it. I didn't quite get it. I didn't quite get why she didn't want to go in. But it kind of put together that one of the main reasons is that her mom, my grandmother, passed away in a nursing home about a week after she was admitted. No fault of the nursing home. It was because she had congestive heart failure, and it was pretty much imminent, and it was the reason why she was going in, was due to that frailty. But for my mom, it was more a matter of recovery. She lives on her own. I work so many hours. My wife was in the midst of her recovery at home, in which time I had taken some time off to work at, well, not really time off, but working from home to take care of my wife. So I kind of had this kind of balancing act that was going to occur. And so my mom decided not to go to the nursing home, went home. So I was trying to balance between taking care of my wife, working, and then driving 40 miles to take care of my mom and help her. And the very next week, 7 days later, the pain became too great. Another ambulance ride, another ER visit. But this time she acquiesced and went into the nursing home for rehabilitation. Obviously a huge blessing because of her medical coverage allowed for this coverage to be able to take place, because otherwise we couldn't afford it. And I was able to take care of my wife, get her back up on her two feet, and start to try and catch up with my job, but things were kind of slipping there. Then right after that, my mom goes through some recovery over the next 2.5 weeks, gets transferred to another nursing facility. And I'll say this, I live in Southern California, and the two places where she's resided so far as nursing homes go have been amazing. The staff has been amazing. It's again, more blessings getting showered in the midst of this calamity. Then She gets transferred to this new nursing home, my mom does, and they, you know, they notice that her recovery is a bit slower. She is falling a bit more, a lot of it due to her stubbornness, not waiting for a nurse to come and help her up. She, you know, they've told her repeatedly, just give us a call, we'll come and help you up if you need to use the restroom, that sort of thing. And she just decided not to do it. Or at least that, you know, that's kind of what I thought. And in any case, another week passes, so 3 weeks into her stay there. And recovery is, again, going slow. But they decide, after interacting with her daily, the nurse is interacting with her daily, that sort of thing, they decided to administer what's called a SLUMS test, S-L-U-M-S. And while it sounds euphemistic, that would be something like, you know, are you living in a slum, that kind of thing. Nothing to do with that. It actually is a test of cognitive function. So they administered this test. They waited a few days, they administered it again, recommended a CT scan. So we got her to the CT scan. And over the last 15 years, actually the same amount of years that I've been married as of today, we'll get to that in a moment, she had started off having a stroke about 15, 16 years ago. And then over the course of those years, they've had regular CT scans that have kind of monitored her brain. And this most recent one has shown that there's been quite a bit of deterioration, little mini strokes here and there over the last few years. And so they diagnosed her with dementia. Taking a breath here. Okay, I'm back. So they diagnosed her with dementia and recommended that she stay in the nursing home. And mainly because, you know, she needs to be able to take care of herself. And again, with me working full time, not having any more vacation time left, or close to no vacation time left, I wouldn't be able to be there for her for the constant care that she needed. You know, we tried working out ways of doing it from home with an in-home support services that we have in Southern California to aid her, but they don't have enough hours to administer based on her coverage to be able to make sure that she's always supervised. It was maybe 3-4 hours a week that she would be eligible for. So they recommended that she stay there. And, you know, they had gone through more interaction with her, and it became less of a recommendation and more of a legal mandate, according to the doctor, that he couldn't legally say, okay, she can, you know, be, you know, out in the wild, basically. So the, you know, that came down, it was a tough discussion with my mom, and, it still is. You know, it's been another month and a half since that occurred. My wife, God bless her, has helped me to sort out my mom's life in her apartment, which turns out was a bit more of a hoarding scenario than I had thought. Not the classic newspaper things, that sort of stuff, but just, you know, piles of mail and that kind of thing that have been secreted away in places that were out of my sight when I came to visit her. And you know, my wife has been great. Her family has come over and helped, you know, her sister, my sister-in-law, and then a couple of my friends, you know, the kinds that move bodies for you, showed up to help out as well. And without them, we'd probably still be a month later still trying to sort out our apartment, but that completed this last weekend. And so all the facets of my mom's life kind of laid bare before me, and you know, the collections of food and the forgotten pills that, you know, were there, and she kept getting new prescriptions. All of these things that if I had really been paying attention, I would have seen it. You know, I would have seen that she had, you know, been suffering from this for a while. And, you know, it's those things that, you know, the Lord kind of like keeps sheltered from your eyes. You know, maybe until you're ready to see it, or your heart softens to see it. And that's kind of what happened, is, you know, my heart's kind of softened to actually acknowledge it and not get frustrated with my mom because of forgetfulness or because of stubbornness. And it was this corresponding emotional combo that would occur that, you know, when she would get forgetful, she would get angry, and that would be her way of kind of defending and pushing me away until such time that her memory was better. She was having more lucid moments, and she'd be sweet, and she'd be nice, and more like the mom that I remember. I mean, my mom's been tough all along. I mean, that's... She's a single mom, raised me since I was three, you know, just tough as nails. You know, she's my hero. So, all of this, all this going on, and, you know, trying to convince her, you know, that's the best place to be. Tough. Stuff to, you know, convince. Dang. A lot of editing from Mike here. It's tough to convince a woman that's been so independent for so long. You know, even in her through her childhood, that sort of thing. You know, she needs constant supervision. She needs to be around people, and that's the antithesis of what she wants. She's an isolationist by heart. You know, that pre-World War II, not that she's that old, but boy, does she have that mentality of the isolationist. But she's kind of been put into it, put into the middle of it. So in any case, through it all, you know, work's been tough. Trying to get my mind wrapped around that. Haven't really had any downtime, you know, my wife and I, just to kind of, like, be together. And on her side of the fence, her father is in drastically failing health. You know, diabetes, kidney dialysis 3-4 times a week, depending upon his condition. And then now he's in heart failure. He's had, I think it was 6 stents, a quintuple bypass, and... the last stent was probably about 3-4 months ago, and the doctor indicated that he can't survive another surgery like that. So now it's kind of a matter of triage. He's in and out of the ER last few weeks. Probably once, twice a week he'll go to the ER. Most recent was about 2 days ago, according from this recording, and so he's. He's not doing well. But he's you know, he's a man of faith. You know, he's got his stubborn streaks, and I think over the last year or two, since his condition has really deteriorated, you know, he's kind of suffered with a bit of depression, and it's caused a bit of bitterness because he realizes he has it, and then he kind of lashes out. But you know, he's still, because I haven't had my father around, he's kind of been a father for me. This does not make good podcasting. But too much just kind of boiling up. But in any case, you know, with his failing health, you know, his faith has been real strong, and that's been really a positive aspect. You know, thankfully, you know, he's ready. You know, he knows that time is coming. But, hey, for the rest of us, yeah, it's kind of tough. But like I said, it's comfort. It's a comfort because he's not afraid of death. You know, he's exhibiting that, that Holy Spirit that's in him. Whereas my mom, yeah, you know, she's you know, professed to believe in God. And, you know, I know not everybody who listens to the podcast may be a person of faith, a Christian. But, you know, that comfort of knowing your maker, of understanding the power with which he moves in your life, boy, is that a comfort. And I really pray for her to have that. It's tough when your own mom doesn't have that kind of comfort. But, you know, let's, you know, kind of make a little mini turn here for my part. There's, you know, there's a huge comfort in knowing that the Lord is there helping. The process of my wife's recovery, of her stalwartness, of her faith and helping me through this. And this is combined with the fact that her and my mom do not get along. You know, my wife has tried and tried, but my mom just cannot stand her. So she's been doing all of these things to help behind the scenes, you know, especially with the apartment. I mean, the amount of work that woman did is miraculous. And I'll call it that. It was miraculous, the amount of work that she did. But, you know, having God in our lives, having that Holy Spirit moving through us, it's held us together. I think our marriage is stronger than it ever has. And I say that today on this recording because this is our 15th year anniversary. And we've been through so much, and I can't imagine us getting closer, but we are. You know, we're not celebrating right now. We haven't had a chance to sit back and say, hey, let's go out to dinner, blah, blah, blah. Let's do those anniversary things. I mean, we're going to put that off till next month, basically, it seems. But, you know, man, we are just dialed in. We're locked in. And it's another aspect of the blessing that God's provided us throughout this time. And so with that being said, you know, the whole process of my mom moving into a nursing home is cataclysmic when it comes to the level of work. But, you know, again, God has been stepping in, and every time I pray and I'm on my knees just begging for help, somebody shows up. You know, there's somebody at the nursing home that says, hey, you know, you might want to do this, and we already took care of this. Or, you know, I went to a county office here. You know, sometimes you're thinking, you know, it's as bad as the DMV. And I was in and out, talking with people, helpful, giving me the right forms, fill them out, signed next day, turn them in, that sort of stuff. I mean, just bam, 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 just amazing things happening. And I know there's difficulties there, but I think because of my focus on the Lord and letting him do his work, letting him, not getting in the way of that, has made this process so much more bearable. I don't want to say it's easy, but bearable. So, all of this to say, you know, all of these emotions and everything, all of it to say that, you know, God is there. He's powerful. He's strong. He is absolutely mighty to save. And, you know, without it, I'd be a wreck. I think kind of expelling all of this and talking about it right now has kind of made it a lot more emotional than I anticipated. So, hopefully you've stuck around long enough to get to this point. That, yeah, you know, and having that Spirit, having that Holy Spirit with you, having God in your life, in my life, as my testimony, has been so important, and I know it's important to others, and it needs to be important to others. Because when you get to these points, you get to these tremendous lows, these tremendous turmoils of emotion, just frothing up like the worst storms. It helps to have a Father in heaven to, you know, it's okay. I'm walking right through it. I'm bringing you right through it. And, you know, it's a reminder, you know, that God doesn't promise that he's going to just, you know, hey, we're just going to get off this freeway where all the traffic and accidents are, and we're just going to go around. We're going to find an alternate Google route to get you through. That's not what he promises, but he does promise to get you through. He does promise to pull you through. He's doing that right now for me, because otherwise I would not be as sane as I am now. And you guys already know I'm absolutely insane. I think I'll wrap with this. Two things. You know, the journey is not over. You know, I've got more difficulties ahead. I have no illusions about that. But I have a wonderful wife. I have wonderful friends, both here and out there on the tavern. All the people and contacts that I've made through this wonderful ministry have been extremely supportive. I post a prayer request in the tavern, and there's, you know, 50, 60 people just piling in, you know, just posting and saying, hey, and we're praying for you, and here's some ideas, that sort of thing. It's been a huge blessing for me, and I can't thank you all enough for that. And then having God there, to be there all the time, has made all the difference. Seeking those quiet moments to pray and get your mind right, get your heart right, get it directed upwards rather than inwards, makes all the difference. So, I think that was the two things. Trying to remember everything, right? But there's a peace to be had through all the storms. There's definitely a peace to be had. So, yeah, family, friends, God. Not necessarily in that order, but they should all be there in one way, shape, or form. So, thanks to all of you. Thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks to all of you for responding and praying and thinking. I hope these kinds of things don't happen to you, but if they do, I hope you know that I'll be glad to help as best I can, and give you guys the knowledge that that God's given me and the experience that God's given me to help you through as well. You know, you can reach out, you know, through Twitter, through the tavern. You could, yeah, those are the best places. But thanks to everybody. I hope hope you all are doing great. I miss a whole mess of you. It seems like it's been forever since the last time I sat down and gamed with somebody up in the tavern, but I guess it's only been 2 months since we were doing the All Bards campaign, which, by the way, I'm going to be doing Table 3 here pretty soon, assuming things kind of settle in. But I do cover your prayers. I do cover your thoughts as those go ongoing. I feel them, and I know, and I know the Lord appreciates it. So that is all from your Uncle Jeff. I hope you all are doing great, and I look forward to engaging with you guys very, very soon. And I guess I might as well say that God is the game master, and no matter how the dice fall, the game plays on.